Welcome to the 72nd edition of Make Pro Wrestling Majestic Again. I am Tiger Hay.
And I am still your Majestic Champion, Peanut Gallery.
You did not defend it.
That's like, true, I didn't.
So, let's talk about what we're doing for this show, because it's a little bit different. So, before we get into your part, we went to the NJPW Autumn Action Show in Las Vegas.
Yes.
So we're going to be talking about that later. But for right now, Peanut Gallery, what are we talking about?
We're going to talk about wrestling that can be done anywhere, like arenas and stadiums and all sorts of other fun things. So obviously wrestling has a history of being held in many different types of venues. So I'm not talking about specific venues, because that's your section.
Yes.
But I'm going to talk about the types of venues and the advantages and disadvantages to them.
I'm actually surprised you didn't even bring up where wrestling started, and that was in the circus and flea markets.
Well, yeah. So it started in essentially outdoor settings, venues, and they were part of those sideshows. They were part of the carnivals. They were part of the
flea markets. There were flea markets wrestling.
There was in a venue that has a very similar setup to stadiums. And why I want to talk first about, arenas, and why I want to talk about arenas first is because naturally those types of venues also had an arena-esque feel to it.
Right.
So when television became a thing and cities started developing their own arenas, wrestling naturally progressed into those venues.
Right, because wrestling, even at that time, was still popular.
Yeah.
When was the first, do you know when the first arena was built?
Oh, no. I mean, arenas have been around for centuries up to this point.
Right.
But wrestling within a modern arena setup, obviously its advantage being that it's already set up for television and it already has that capacity.
It already has the lighting. Right. There's production stuff that's already associated with... with other sports, it was a natural transition into it.
And it also works well for camera setups as well because of the way that the stadium is or the arena is laid out. And we contrast that with stadiums, which are becoming more common with WWE.
Well, they're doing it for, the big shows. Right. They're not doing it for – they try to do it for, any regular show, but – now I think they just kind of learn their lesson and they don't do that.
Right.
So it's a much larger.
Right. And obviously one of the disadvantages being from a fan standpoint, it's not very conducive to watching the show live because of the fact that it is on a much larger playing surface.
If you get those nosebleed seats, it's going to be a lot harder to see them. Now, it's not impossible. You and I, when we went to SummerSlam a couple of years ago, when it was in Allegiant, which was this event, I didn't think that we did all that bad. I thought we actually had okay-ish seats, even though we were a little bit higher.
Yeah, they were okay. They weren't the best, but they were okay.
Right.
Also,
they cut the stadium in half.
Yes, and that's another thing that we have to bring up, too, because the stadium is not always at full capacity.
Exactly.
The only time that they're ever at full capacity is for WrestleMania.
Right.
And even then, there's large parts of the arena that are, or the stadium, that are not
used.
That are not used because of the entrance and the hard camera stuff. And so that can be difficult to, from a live standpoint, I think
them, especially for SummerSlam, cutting the stadium in half was a good idea, not only to get that hard camera, but also so people can see.
Yeah.
Because they've had issues in the past of people not being able to see anything because they've booked it in such a big arena.
Right.
And this is in contrast with I think you'll get into it later.
Right. Let's get into the next one here, which is, again,
an amphitheater.
Yes,
right.
A literal amphitheater, which of course visually doesn't look the best.
I think it personally looks cool. I've always liked when they did shows in dailies.
Right.
Always.
But there is a sense that is the style that they set up anyways, because if you think about SummerSlam and, a stadium show like that, you are going to have a setup that is very similar to what an amphitheater is, because you'll always have one section where everyone's there, and then the other side, now this is not necessarily the case for Daly's Place, but then the other side is reserved for the hard camera and for fewer fans.
Right.
So,
well, I mean, I think Daily Place is a great example of that hard camera angle nonsense, because I think that whole cartoning off that specific place for the hard camera is nonsense. They've done it before. They do it here. The hard camera angle is the people are literally right behind the hard camera.
Right.
So them doing that, I think it's more of a capacity restriction than it is than it is an actual issue. So people saying, oh, they have to fill it in a certain way, I think it's nonsense. That's just me, though. If you can't sell out the arena, you cannot sell out the arena. There's nothing wrong with that. But
they try not to. But if you go to like a Raw or SmackDown WWE event, there will be instances where the seating is only on one side, akin to what this would be, essentially an amphitheater style setup.
And like I said, I like it. I think it's like that personal thing, and we're going to talk about that when we get into Sam's Town, because we always like going to those.
Let's talk about the next venue. Let's talk about studios, which are another great example of ways in which wrestling arenas have been set up. Now, obviously, a studio is not a professional wrestling, is not a very large professional wrestling venue, but it certainly has the production, I think, that they want as well.
Right.
So this actually was the start of, this actually goes way back to syndicated television days, when you would have to do it inside of a studio.
Yep.
So, you know, again, the setup is kind of weird and wonky, but this is how they used to do it. And of course, NWA being wanting to go to that style is
I think it still works well for what they do with it. It's a little more personal.
It's a very intentional style of creating.
What I like about this style of wrestling is that it becomes very personal. Mm-hmm. And the fans, no matter what seats they are able to grab, they're going to get a good experience.
Right.
And everybody's on the same playing field. If you get first row, cool. If you don't, not a big deal, because you still have this visual from like this perspective. Yeah, you get to see everything. Yeah. Nothing is out of the ordinary, which is what I personally like about it.
Right.
But that's just me. And I think visually they do a great job with NWA, given their probably smaller budget, despite Billy Corgan being a multimillionaire.
He's not going to blow his entire budget on this. But again, this is how they used to have to do it. And Billy Corgan bringing it back like this is very intentional on his part. Now let's talk about ballrooms like Sam's Town, because Sam's Town technically is a ballroom.
This was a nightclub.
Or
the Rebellion was.
Yeah, it was.
This venue was a nightclub.
Right,
which is another one I really like.
Yeah, but here's what I'm getting at, though, is that a ballroom is a specific type of room that is used for professional wrestling shows. Now, is it akin to what you would expect? It's not an arena. It's a specific facility that uses multiple, you know, like you could do it for weddings, for proms, for a bunch of different things.
Right. It's just a very large room that you can fit anything in there to make it work. I mean, you can have wrestling, and then the next day you can have a quinceañera. Like, it can literally be that drastic in this situation where I think, you know, some people do it better than others. Impact Wrestling has done it fairly well. We can have some pros and cons when we get to how New Japan did it, because they did it very differently.
They did.
But I think I actually have always really liked this visually when they did that Rebellion in when they did it in the nightclub. I thought that was a really cool venue for wrestling, and we will talk about another nightclub-esque place that actually does wrestling back in the day.
Right.
But I like this visually. And then,
of course, you got a more traditional sort of ballroom with NWA when they did their show at the Chase. Now, you know, what are the pros and cons to having, a ballroom style venue?
It limits your attendance, but at the same time, that you give everybody a decent experience.
Yes.
And I think you have to kind of look at it. If you're going to be a promoter, you have to look at it as, do I want a larger building to make it look good on television?
Right.
Or do I want it more personal, still make it look good? Because the NWA still makes their shows look really good mm-hmm. with how they do their camera angles, but then it's a lot more personable. People will go out of their way to go to a thing like that.
Right.
But when WWE comes into town, as an example, you're like, eh, gotta have to go down to the arena. Not a big deal. Not a big fan of that.
Right.
We're going to worry about that
later.
So,
you know, those types of venues, great. Not really akin to sports, but it or entertainment for that matter, because it's not really set up for those types of things.
You'd be surprised.
But, yeah, it really just depends on how much you bring it to the table.
Right.
You know, so those are just a couple of examples of types of venues that wrestling has either traditionally or currently been involved in.
Yep.
And so what can we gather from that? So, you know, obviously arenas are the best in terms of the infrastructure that's there, where you don't have to bring a lot of new stuff in because it's already built for the purpose of.
There's already audio. There's already like modified audio stuff. And we're not saying that there's no production in it whatsoever. They don't have a cookie cutter for everything. But it's like you have the space to make a big grandiose show
right.
with a very elaborate entrance right. and you have pyro and you have all of this where, you know, in a place like NWA or Impact, don't do that.
Right, you can't have that kind
well,
of
no, I mean, you can have pyro, but
right.
it's not necessary. You have to
right.
you have to be a little more creative with what you're doing.
Right.
So, you know, but at the same time, you get I personally get a much better experience
oh, yeah,
when I go
course.
To a smaller place. Because I get to be right there.
Right.
And they're not as protected, so you can have an interaction with these wrestlers and get to know the person, which I really do enjoy.
Right. So, you know, and like I said, the problem with smaller venues, of course, from a production from a production standpoint, is you got to bring a lot more to the table.
Right.
Because they're not built for sports events. They're really built as a multi-purpose, multi-use venue. So you kind of have to play around with it, so to speak.
Right. A little more creativity has to be done in
right.
an arena-based show, or not an arena-based show, in a smaller setting like a ballroom as a subtraction to an arena.
An arena, right.
Right.
So those are just a couple of things. And then, you know, of course, sound stages. It's just going for that look. So that's kind of what I got. Do you have anything you want to add?
No, not entirely. So
all
when
right.
we come back, I'm going to be talking about professional wrestling venues in general. So we're going to talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
All right, and we are back. So because we were talking about venues and all of that stuff in mm-hmm. Peanut Gallery's part, I want to talk about the history of venues that actually cater more towards wrestling and combat sports.
Right, and we're not talking about, like, the famous ones like Madison Square Garden, because Madison Square Garden, while it is a venue notable for wrestling, it is not necessarily a venue that is built for wrestling. It's actually
right.
built for, you know, hockey and basketball.
Right, it's a smaller venue, but wrestling has just done it so well there for a while. So let's go to our first one, which is the 2300 Arena, also known as the ECW Arena. Now, it was never officially called the ECW Arena. It was always, it had a couple of different names, but 2300 is there because actually that is the cross section on where it is in Philadelphia. So ECW ran there between the early 90s up until its closure in April of 2001. The first show that ECW had there was in May of 1993, and they did shows there throughout that time because Heyman was friends with the owner of the company, and they always sold out really well because they promoted it heavily mm-hmm. in that market. In the area that the 2300 Arena is in is very industrial,
mm-hmm.
so there's not a whole lot going on, but the parking at 2300 was always good, and what I learned through my research is that the ECW portion of the arena is only a part of this. It's actually a warehouse, a multifunctional thing, so somebody could rent out that space for a business and run their business outside of that, so there, it was actually sectioned off. So there was stuff for obviously wrestling, but that's not what it was built for.
Right.
It really became an arena.
So it was more like a multi-purpose sort of thing.
It was a multi-purpose space, right.
It's very akin to what Samstown Live is.
Yes, exactly. So you can do a couple of different things, but a lot of what they did here was around industry.
Right.
So there were spots within the same building that actually had like freight, like freight garages where you can take in and pull out. There were places where you can have certain businesses. I think when ECW was running it, they had to be careful because there was a motorcycle shop that was in the same building. So they had to make sure that nobody can get into the motorcycle shop at that same time. Since its closure, other places go into that arena to do like big grandiose shows. It's actually one of the more popular ones for the outlaw hardcore wrestling, like CZW. When they go in there, CZW will run their shows and they actually call it the CZW arena when they're there because they do a bunch of tapings there. And then there was three pro wrestling when they called it the 3PW Stadium. And Ring of Honor does a bunch of shows there. They don't call it the Ring of Honor Arena, but that's just kind of what they do with that. The building itself has been recognized as the birthplace of American hardcore wrestling, and it has been the home of the Hardcore Wrestling Hall of Fame since 2002. Okay. So they do other things in the same place, but a lot of it is around that whole hardcore thing. And obviously there is the famous mural inside of the building of ECW and when it ran, because it was actually one of the more popular things that brought wrestling to the building. Let's talk about Mid-South Coliseum. I don't think you actually talked about Coliseums in your part.
No, but it's an arena.
Right.
Yeah, it's a Coliseum is a style of arena.
Right. It's just built more like a Coliseum-esque thing. Very, very bowly.
Yeah.
It's a very bowl-esque shape. Same thing all the way around. Now, the Mid-South Coliseum played host to United States American Wrestling Association and Jerry Lawler, and they dominated this arena. So if you lived within that Memphis area, you go to the Coliseum for Coliseum wrestling.
Right.
So it's kind of there. And they actually, back in the day, they called this the Southern Madison Square Garden because this is where all the big moments happen in Memphis wrestling. And Memphis was very, very big in this area. Jim Crockett Promotions tried to run some shows here, but Jerry Lawler, who was the booker for Mid-South, didn't really like that.
Right.
So he kind of kept it very closed off.
Right.
And then WWE used to go here as well, but Jerry Lawler really couldn't do anything about that because, number one, he had a working relationship with WWF, but then also WWF had the money, and the owner of the building was like, they have some money, so they did that. But Mid-South always took priority, so Jerry Lawler's shows always took priority over literally anything else.
Right.
How they actually did the scheduling was is that they would work with Lawler first on book out 3 months, and then they focused other shows around Mid-South Wrestling.
Right.
Because that was the fastest selling in terms of tickets, and it was one of the more highly attended shows that they had all the time.
Right.
I do not believe Mid-South Coliseum exists anymore, and they do shows fairly rarely because it's a...
Right.
It was a... The original one, they did do like a lot of rodeos and stuff.
Right, okay.
We'll get into another place that does that because there's a very famous rodeo expo that has wrestling there too. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the Allstate Arena. What was it called before the Allstate Arena? The Rosemount Horizon.
Oh, that's right.
So you would go to
WWE's All Our Chicago shows there.
Yep. So there is actually a long history of wrestling with the Rosemount.
Yeah.
And actually, it was used to be called, you go to Wrestling at the Horizon.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just kind of what it was.
Yeah, WrestleMania 22 took place there.
There was a ton of shows that came here. No Mercy, there were a couple of Survivor Series that took place here. I think there were like two different WrestleManias that took place at Allstate.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this was the place for 22, which was the last WrestleMania.
Arena WrestleMania, yeah.
Because after that, they went to
stadiums.
To stadiums with Detroit's for 23.
Mm-hmm.
But they this was not the only this was not the only company that works with this. So WCW went to Rosemount. The NWA went to Rosemount. So a lot of places went to Rosemount Horizon. So it's been with wrestling.
It has not been a home arena for AEW, though. They chose a different place.
Where did they choose? Do you know?
I think it's called Sears Center now or something.
Is it bigger or not?
It's smaller.
Oh, okay. So they can't sell it out again. I think the first All In was at Allstate, wasn't it?
I don't think so.
I don't think so. Oh, anyway. Yeah. So there's just a good long history here for wrestling, the Rosemount Horizon. Now, this next one is very unique because the promoter built the arena, and that is...
The Cow Palace.
Oh, not the Cow Palace. Do they not have Arena Mexico? Oh, I don't. Anyway, I was going to talk about Arena Mexico because Arena Mexico was built by the person who created CMLL.
I think that's probably the only place in the in the world, actually, that is built specifically for wrestling.
Yes. It was built on top of the older arena, which was built in the 1910s, which was called Arena Modelo.
Mm-hmm.
But Arena Modelo could not pass certain inspections, so when Salvador bought the property, it was either mow it down and build something new out of it, or
try to renovate.
And renovating was actually going to cost him more money. So he tore down the place, and using, I think he used money that he won in a poker game to build this back in the 30s. So, a very old building. They still do shows to this day in Arena Mexico. And back in the day when there was a better working relationship, Triple A did some of their shows in Arena Mexico for a larger scale show.
Right.
Even though it's not really larger scale, but it's like going back to Madison Square Garden.
Right.
Despite it not being a large venue, it's a big show.
Right.
So, that's just kind of there. Now, let us talk about the Cow Palace. I mentioned in the past that sometimes they use places that were built for rodeos mm-hmm. and for selling off livestock as places for wrestling.
Yep.
And because the Cow Palace is in San Francisco, it was really the only big place on the Golden Coast to do wrestling.
Yep.
It was called the Golden Coast's Madison Square Garden because this is where all huge NWA shows
yep.
go to do their
in
wrestling
fact, now
shows.
It's become a home arena now for AEW when they go out there. In fact, mm-hmm. there's rumors that Revolution is taking place at the Cow Palace.
Yep, and Cow Palace is still very well known for doing wrestling, and it has since the early 70s.
Yep.
The Cow Palace used to be called the California State Livestock Pavilion because that's what the intention
right.
was to build this.
Yeah.
Right. So they do big shows there, and it was dominated by Roy Shire mm-hmm. with NWA San Francisco, and that dominated Cow Palace. But, you know, Ric Flair and Roddy Piper, who wrestled in Oregon, and all of these all of those people on the West Coast go here.
Right.
So that's where you got a lot of that exposure.
Right.
You had wrestlers like Gorgeous George wrestle at the Cow Palace
mm-hmm.
because the Cow Palace has been around since like 1938.
Right.
So it's a very old building. But I thought that one was kind of cool seeing what it does now as it relates to wrestling. And I think there are some other indie shows that still run shows
yeah.
within the Cow Palace. It's just not as popular because Territory Days, not there, and for some reason, and we might really get into it, but this part of the country was never big wrestling. It just never really caught on like it did in the East Coast.
Right.
So that might be something we'll talk about later because that is a very important discussion too. Now let's go over to Japan with Korakuen Hall.
Yep, and this one was built for sumo wrestling.
No,
it wasn't.
Korakuen Hall was not built for sumo wrestling. We'll talk about the one that was.
Oh, okay.
Because this one is actually very different. Because of the next one we'll talk about, this one was built for combat sports almost exclusively.
Oh, okay.
So mixed martial arts is
boxing,
done here. Taekwondo, karate, any of the martial arts, and then wrestling was put in there too. I wanted to bring this one up because this is a much smaller arena. I think like the full capacity of this building is like 2,500 people.
Right.
It's a very small place.
Yeah.
But it's very rich within Japanese wrestling.
Isn't this where WWE had their Beast in the East event?
No, I think they did it at Budokan, which we'll talk about here in a second. Now, that was the sumo place.
Okay.
But this one doesn't really do sumo, but the ECW had a lot of their big super cards when they worked with FMW at this building. WWF did shows here at one time back in the 90s. They did it at this place.
Okay.
Before anything else was really built because of the rich heritage of wrestling here. So, obviously, New Japan does shows here, especially with huge tournaments.
Yeah.
They all do a lot of their stuff here at Currican Hall.
Yep.
So that's just kind of there. It is a multifunctional place, so you can do other things at this building,
mm-hmm.
but they really give exclusivity to combat sports, such as professional wrestling, such as MMA, and you know, all of that stuff. The whole culture of combat sports in Japan is such a different animal, and I don't think people are prepared for something like that.
No.
I went to a Wrestle Kingdom back in the day, and it's such a different feel. They take it very, very seriously. If you think people take AEW way too seriously, you have no idea. Japan just doesn't post it. So let's talk about Nippo Budokan, which is the sumo hall that they built because it's actually shaped like a coliseum.
It is, yeah.
Much larger. But this was the place that did wrestling back in the day, but they never did it with New Japan.
Hmm.
This was almost exclusively pro wrestling NOAH and All Japan.
Ah, okay.
Now, the issue, what happened here, was that Budokan's owners got worried and stopped doing wrestling for a very long time after the death of Masaharu Misawa and Kenta Kobashi's retirement. Because wrestling went down after that, and it wasn't really popular in the country anymore.
So they were worried about it, like, financially just not making sense.
Yes, so they stopped doing wrestling there for a very long time, because Misawa died in the 90s, and just recently, New Japan brought it back for their G1 finals. So actually, New Japan really saved Budokan's reputation on doing wrestling, because this is where almost All Japan and NOAH did their shows almost exclusively was at Budokan.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of a cool building, too. I saw it in person. It was really neat. Now, the last place is the Greensboro Coliseum, because this was another very large southern place for wrestling.
Oh, yeah.
Especially
North Carolina, yeah.
Yep. Ric Flair, Dusty Rhodes. I mean, I could go on for hours.
This is kind of Jim Crockett Promotions.
Yeah, this
back
was,
in the day, this
yep,
was his
this
home
was,
territory.
This was Jim Crockett Promotions. Big show was at the Greensboro Coliseum.
Mm-hmm.
So they always ran larger shows here. So they had four different Starcades here. They had three different Survivor Series in this same building back in the day. So WCW, WWF ran here for a while. I don't think they do anymore because this is very much a smaller venue as well. So I don't want to go too much into it because there are so many different venues that
are
so known for wrestling.
There are.
So we'll talk about that maybe in the future episode of Wrestling Lesson, but when we come back, we're going to talk about our experience for Samstown.
Yeah.
And I wanted to end on Samstown history with wrestling when we get into that, because it is very important. So we are back, and let's talk about the New Japan Strong series of tapings that you and I went to. Right.
So it was only one day. It was on Sunday, which is why last week we did the show on Saturday.
Yep.
And it was a Sam's Town, and this was indeed a set of tapings. So we saw a lot of matches, but they didn't provide a lot of card because, of course, it was meant to take place over the course of 2 or 3 weeks.
Right. So, spoiler alerts ahead, obviously.
Yeah.
But before we get into that, I want to talk about very briefly why Sam's Town is the wrestling place for Las Vegas.
Yeah.
The issue with this is that when they were starting to build their mega casinos, the wrestling scene was still somewhat less, and I think it was just indicative of West Coast wrestling.
Yeah.
It wasn't really anything big here in, like, Southern California or in Nevada. And a lot of the larger casinos did not want to take the chance with wrestling because boxing dominated Vegas.
Right. And so, later MMA.
Yep. So, Sam's Town, which was one of the oldest casinos right now that still exists, took the chance, found it to be successful within their area because a lot of residents wanted to go there and do that and be at a specific venue. So that's why Sam's Town, even to this day, still does wrestling.
Yeah.
And a lot of places like Impact Wrestling, Ring of Honor, New Japan, all of these companies want to work with Sam's Town because of the reputation that Sam's Town has with wrestling.
Right.
So, let's go ahead.
Specifically within Sam's Town, there is a small multi-purpose room, if you want to call it that, called Sam's Town Live. Mainly caters to things like proms, quinceañeras. It's just a gigantic.
There's like a big stage.
Yep.
You can do like venues and banquets and all of that fun stuff.
That's what it's really known for, is a lot of that stuff. That's what they primarily do. But so you have a room with a lot of seats. You have lighting. You have audio. I mean, it makes sense.
Right. You have a place to where there can be monetization. So there's like a little balcony and stuff on the hard camera angle. So that's right near the doors, too. So that's kind of the setup for this. You've never been to Sam's Town. So let's talk about the card itself. What are your thoughts? This was your first experience with the New Japan program.
Very, very fast-paced.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of just wrestling. You know, I mean, this is what it is.
Right.
It's just a huge wrestling
show. Also, please, for the love of God, don't do shows on a fucking Sunday. Some of us have work in the morning.
So, you know, I think the show itself was fine. The audience, so compared to Impact shows, so Impact will do a lot of like, okay, on the count of three, cheer, boo, cheer, you know, like that sort of thing.
Right.
They didn't have that ish. They didn't have that in the New Japan show.
I actually really liked that because it felt more authentic.
It did, yes. So when we go to the Impact tapings, because they are just going to be tapings, I am fully expecting cheers, boos, you know, like
we're going to have that. And also the physical structure of Autumn Action was very different as well. They had the entrance in the same place. Mm-hmm. They did it fairly similar to what Impact does, but
it was much smaller. The entrance was much smaller, which is fine.
They didn't have Impact Wrestling puts out bleachers.
Yes.
For people who want to pay general admission.
Yeah.
And that's all well and good, but New Japan didn't do that.
No,
they literally had the whole space open. Yeah. You got to see the entire size of the room.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, wow, Impact Wrestling really condenses what they have into a much smaller area.
Yeah.
So that was kind of weird. And also, what New Japan does is that they have the seats like around the ring, boom, boom, and boom. Right. But then they also had seats that went like a dart.
Right.
Where Impact Wrestling, what they do is that they span it like the whole way across where they are, which I've always thought to be very bizarre.
Mm-hmm.
So actually the orientation of what they did actually was more pleasant.
Right.
So I thought that was kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, let's get into the matches themselves.
Right.
So we start off with Kevin Knight, who was a LA Dojo guy, taking on Ari Daivari. And it was an okay opener.
Yeah,
I yelled at Ari Daivari that he is a discount Sean Daivari, and he got pissed off.
Yeah, he said, fuck you.
It was really funny. It got butthurt about it. That was really funny.
So yeah, it was an okay match.
It was an okay match.
It wasn't anything to write home about. It was about a 5-minute match.
Yep. You know.
Yeah.
Or you know, Orange Cassidy thumbs up. They worked hard. I liked them. I like that they're showcasing some of the people that are training at the LA
of course,
dojo. Because
that's what New Japan Pro Wrestling Strong is just a showcase of those characters along with some of the more established stars.
Right.
And stars that are not traditionally Japanese focused, if you want to put it that way.
Let's go on to our next match, which was the West Coast Wrecking Crew, which is Royce Isaacs and Joel Nelson taking on Gregory Sharp and Jacob Austin Young, who was very popular within that crowd. So I thought that was very interesting.
Yeah.
That, you know, there are established people in there. So I'm assuming that Sharp, Nelson, and Young are maybe even people who went on excursion. They have a gimmick now from the LA Dojo.
Yeah.
So, you know, once again, a decent little match. Nothing to write home to mom about. I thought it was a good showcase to establish some people for the tag belts.
Oh,
and
absolutely.
It was a Death Valley Driver on the knees for the West Coast Wrecking Crew to win. I'm going to do the same thing. I'm going to give an Orange Cassidy thumbs up. So, J.R. Kratos, and it was Danny Limelight, but I wrote down a washcloth for some reason, so I'm going to call him Washcloth from now on.
Okay.
He looked horrible. He looked like he was wearing a washcloth. So, they go out there to challenge Aussie Open for the tag team.
So this at this point, this is when, you know, this is where the whole taping thing comes into effect. So, they did the challenge, and then they did the actual match on the same night. Part of me thinks that these are going to take place on two separate weeks of television.
Right.
Because you
given the amount of matches, who was in them, and the pacing of the said matches, it really leans into that it's going to be a multi-show thing.
At least 2 weeks worth of tapings happens.
Right. Easily.
Yeah.
So let's go on to our next match. They challenged for the tag belts. It was a nothing. I thought it kind of broke up the general flow of the show, but that's just me. I wasn't a big fan of it. Doc Gallows taking on Shea Cabrera. So this is where one of the matches had to be changed around because Eddie Kingston couldn't be there because he got COVID.
Yeah.
And then I think another person had to leave due to personal reasons.
Right.
So they left out of the card, and this is kind of what happened. Doc Gallows was going to be in the main event.
Mm.
So it was a swinging neck breaker for Doc Gallows to win.
Uh-huh.
Sure, it was a whatever match, to be honest with you, but given the circumstances, it was fine.
Yeah, it was fine.
It was kind of there. Yeah, and Orange Cassidy thumbs up to be nice. Let's talk about Fred Rosser and Chris Dickinson. Now, this is where we had a rivalry going into this match.
Yeah.
And I was a bit surprised that Chris Dickinson was on this show at all, given his current situation on suing the people that accused him, a la Joey Ryan, which I thought was interesting. But you know what? He's doing that. Whatever.
Right.
He looked good, I will say. I do like the rivalry with Fred Rosser.
Yeah.
This is giving the strong open weight champion some legs and a rivalry for people to go after.
Right.
So that was good. I thought they structured the match well, and given the rivalry, it was exciting.
Yeah.
I thought it was a very exciting match.
Thumbs up.
I did too. I thought it was really good. Fred Rosser, obviously Darren Young back in the day, and he looks pretty good. I like him. I like his fire. I like his theme song a lot.
Yeah.
I thought the theme song was cool as shit. And also, very popular. He was probably he got one of the bigger pops of the evening.
Yeah.
So awesome. Christopher Daniels and Yuya Unama.
Man, I like that guy.
Unama?
Yeah.
Yeah, I like him too. He's very good.
He is.
Christopher Daniels, man, I don't know what he is. So it was really funny. He's like, I am the king of San Francisco. And I said, even though you're from Kalamazoo, Michigan, he is from Kalamazoo. And a lot of people got a kick out of that. It's like, how are you the king of Los Angeles? You're not even from, like, you're not even from here. And I know he got a little peeved about that, which was a lot of fun.
It was.
I do like this because they were in the tournament for the strong openweight tag team champions.
Yes, and I think this was my favorite rivalry going into it. I really liked it. It really showcased Yuya, which was really good.
Oh yeah, he got a decent babyface pop. The match was very well paced. I thought it was fine. Christopher Daniels still playing a heel, had a post-match. This is a perfect place for Christopher Daniels.
Yes.
Because given his experience and given everything, this is a great showcase for him.
Right.
And not only a great showcase for him, right, a good pacing for him, but also to really give some of these younger guys like Yuya an opportunity to really grow and work with a guy who has so much experience.
Right, exactly.
So,
give this a thumbs up.
I do too. I thought it was really good. I liked the post-match. I like that Yuya won with a roll-up, kept Daniel strong, but also gave Yuya the victory, which was always good. Sorry, taking a drink. Let's talk about a match I actually had a graphic for, because it was a match that did not change. So we have Ren Narita taking on Juice Robinson. Robinson did a pre-match attack, busting up Ren.
So the capsule that they use for the blood is just everywhere.
So was it a capsule that they
used?
Yeah,
it was. I believe it was a capsule.
Okay,
it just got everywhere. It was all over his face.
It looked really good. It looked very good visually.
It did until you realize it's like, okay, this is a little much.
Right. Now,
here's
the thing. Here's the thing. With that and the fact that it was like a brutal, bloody attack, and then they restarted the match with a no disqualification stipulation.
Right, which is interesting because Japan...
I loved it. Such a breath of fresh air, man.
And in New Japan, though, they traditionally do not do
this is their American version of that. So I think that's actually a fairly good dynamic, and especially given how long the show was, this was a great breakout from the Monday.
And you know, here's the other thing too, and I think the reason that they have the seating the way they have the seating is because that's more of a Japanese style of a seating arrangement. So.
Right. No, I thought this was...
Take with it what you will.
Right. This was a good match, though. Yeah. I thought these two worked really well together. They paced it really well.
Yep.
Given it being a no disqualification, they used quite a bit of weaponry, which I was very happy
about.
I'm going
to give it a thumbs up, though.
I am, too. I really liked it. It was a modified arm breaker submission thing for Ren to win, so he got good babyface fire, too.
Yep.
Very happy about this overall. Let's talk about our next match, which was... Shota Unimo and QT Marshall, who was just hilarious.
Oh, yeah.
He really, like, interacted with the fans quite a bit, and his comebacks were just on point, man.
Yeah, they were.
Very good. The match itself was good. I liked it. Yeah. It was a fun match. I said this in my regular reviews a couple of weeks ago about QT Marshall and how good this guy is.
Mm-hmm.
And... seeing him live,
he's one of those veterans, though. You know, he's there to enhance the younger talent, which he did masterfully.
Oh yeah, he did a very good job doing that. It really put over the double arm DDT that Shota's doing now. Very good, well paced, lots of fun. Full thumbs up from me. I really like this match. Kind of a sleeper match, I'll be honest with you.
Yeah, it was. That was definitely a sleeper match.
All right, a match that I was personally looking forward to, which was Alex Zane and Mystico taking on Blake Christian and Mascara Dorada.
It was about what I expected, a lot of high-flying
stuff. A lot of lucha, and once again, you had one more technical, a hardcore, you gotta have a little lucha in there.
Yeah.
And I thought they did pretty okay with it.
Yeah, I'm
overall.
Give it a thumbs up.
Yep, I liked it. I thought it was paced very well.
Yeah.
It's awesome seeing Mystico wrestle. This was the match that I was looking forward to the most because I'm a big fan of Mystico.
Yeah.
So when I saw that, I'm like, we have to get tickets to this.
Yes.
And I'm very glad that we did. Yes. I just wish
we'll give our full review after we're done with all the matches.
Right.
There were a lot of matches on this card.
There were quite a bit, which is kind of leaning into the thing about it being a taping.
Right.
But yeah, no, I thought it was a well-paced match overall. Yep. It was a top rope flipping slam thing for Mystico to pick up the victory for his team. Good respect, lots of good fire. Yep. Everybody played their part really well.
Yep.
And they gave it a decent amount of time. Good match overall. Full thumbs up for me. I just liked it. Let's talk about the strong tag team title match, which was Aussie Open and Team Filthy, which was... Kratos and Danny Limelight
Washcloth. So again, this is where I said, okay, these are tapings that are going to take place at least over 2 weeks because they're not going to have the open challenge and the tag team match on the same night.
And especially given on how far apart they were.
Right.
Because keep in mind, that was like the third segment in the show, and this is like the eighth or tenth.
Yeah.
So that's just kind of what that was. It was a good match.
It was.
Kratos is a big guy. Yellow is not his color, though.
No.
He looked like Ronald McDonald coming out there. It was not a good color combo. Not a good color. But I thought that the match itself was good. Aussie Open, very popular with the crowd.
Oh, yeah.
I will say that.
Aussie Open is one of my new favorite tag teams.
Yeah, and, no, they're a great tag team.
And, of course, they're also part of my favorite faction.
Right, United Empire, who are just on a roll with pretty much everything right now. Yeah. So they were very popular with the crowd. It was the Koliosis, I think that's how I pronounce it, but whatever, for Aussie Open to retain. Lots of fun. I thought the story within the ring was good.
Yeah.
Maybe if we watched a little more strong, I would have gotten the rivalry between Team Filthy and the Aussie Open, but I think I got enough information to at least enjoy the match
for what it was. Very enjoyable.
Full thumbs up.
Yep,
absolutely. Let's talk. Okay. This was my favorite match of the night.
Tomohiro Ishii is so small.
Okay, so Tomohiro Ishii looks a lot bigger on television than he does IRL. He is very small, but Filthy Tom Lawler, being from Vegas, huge babyface pop.
Yep.
The Daisy Dukes tights were funny. I thought those were pretty funny. But overall, this was a pretty good match.
It was.
Very good back and forth. Obviously, Tom Lawler is a MMA guy, so he didn't have to really... he could pull back the punches on Ishii, but Ishii is a tough son of a bitch, so... Yeah. He really kind of faced it well.
This was like a good 15-minute match.
Mm-hmm. This was one of the longer matches, and I'm glad it was.
Yeah. They certainly put on a good clinic.
Oh, yeah. But Ishii won with a lariat. I thought that was a interesting decision.
I'm going to still give it a thumbs up.
Oh, absolutely. I'm going to give it a full thumbs up. It was a very good match.
Oh,
but it was just that final one. Let's talk about our next match, which was Rocky Romero and Shingo Takagi.
Yeah.
This was a good match,
too. It was.
Shingo, very popular with the crowd. And he played more of the heel, too.
He did.
Now, Shingo is a lot bigger in person than he is.
Than he presents himself on TV.
He's a bit taller.
Yeah.
Like, he's very tall, and he's very top heavy.
Yeah.
He's a very bulky guy,
top-wise. Yes.
So, but they wrestled very well. Rocky Romero, despite him losing, he did not look weak in defeat.
No.
Really good babyface comebacks. Really good overall. Yep. I thought the pacing of it was well. And like you said, this was when we got longer. So, 10-minute match, would you say, give or take?
Yeah, I think it was between 10 and 15 minutes,
yep.
I think.
And it was Way of the Dragon for Shingo to pick up the victory. Gets a full thumbs up from me.
Full thumbs up.
Really liked it.
Yep.
And now let's go into our main event, modified, so I don't have a picture, which was Jay White and Carl Anderson taking on Homicide and Wheeler Yuta. This was a good main event.
It was.
People were... So, it was really funny. There was a moment where... Because they were playing to the crowd. Jay White was yelling at Carl Anderson to squeeze and squeeze because it was in the headlock.
Right.
So when they turned it around, the entire fan base was like, squeeze, squeeze.
It was definitely a squeeze fest.
Oh, it was
pun,
so...
Pun fully intended.
Oh, yeah. This was probably a 20-minute match.
It was. It was about 20 minutes.
And it was a good 20 minutes.
It was a good 20-minute
very
match.
Very well timed, very good paced.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of fun. You know, here's the one thing. Wheeler Yuta's kind of, I would say, a controversial figure on how he is. He's actually very good live.
He is.
He's also really funny. I don't think he really shows a lot of that emotion
on
television, and I think it's disappointing.
Yeah.
I'll be honest with you. He really made a fan out of me. Homicide, very good veteran.
Yep.
Obviously worked around with some really good people.
Yep. And then after the show, let's talk about the win and then give our rating.
Yeah. It was a Blade Runner for Bullet Club to win. It gets a full thumbs up for
full
me.
Thumbs
definitely.
Up for me.
And then there was Filthy Tom Lawler and everybody go out there to close out the show.
Yep.
They attacked the baby faces a little bit more.
Yeah. So Jay White is going to be challenging Eddie Kingston at AEW's Grand Slam. So we'll see him again very soon.
Yep.
And otherwise, it was a great way to end the show, of course. of course, Bullet Club did leave the ring, gave the ring essentially to Filthy Tom Lawler and the rest of
Team Filthy, because obviously he's from Vegas. Right. So I thought that was a good way to end it. We were pretty much out the door by then because we didn't really have like a full dinner, so we were starving.
Yeah.
So we went directly to get food right after the final match.
Now, there weren't a lot of people at TGI Fridays.
I know. It was very unusual.
It was only Rick Abani and...
Alex Kozlov.
That's right.
The English commentators
who were there, of course, because it was for tapings. Otherwise, it was a great show.
It was. I really liked it. Overall, I'm going to give it a full thumbs up. I would have given it two, but I will say one thing.
They should have done it on Saturday.
Yeah, they should have done it on Friday or Saturday. We would have been a lot happier. Yeah. Just overall, if they did it at a different time, it was just way too late on a day where it was like, I mean, by the time we got home, it was pretty much midnight.
Yeah.
So we're like, oh my God, I'm tired.
Let's go to bed.
Right. So we did.
Anyways, great show. Was it worth the money? Absolutely.
Oh, absolutely. 100%.
100% worth the money. Will I recommend this to friends? Absolutely.
Oh, yeah,
it
was good.
If you want to see some good Japanese wrestling without traveling to Japan, NJPW Strong is a pretty good bet.
Oh, absolutely. You're going to get a little bit of everything. Yeah. You had some Japanese stars there, so you got a little bit of that Strong style. We had some hardcore. We got some lucha. A very diverse
roster.
Little taping there.
Yeah.
And it entertained me pretty much from bell to bell.
Yeah.
We did have an intermission in between two, so that was good. I like it when they do that intermission.
Yeah.
So you can, use a bathroom and all that stuff.
Before the big matches, they go and clean the ring and all that stuff.
Right.
So.
Well, especially after the no disqualification with all the blood. So there you go. Anyway, so next week.
There is a pay-per-view TBD, but we have to do some more research on that.
I don't think it's a pay-per-view because there is a Burning Spirit tour, and that just happens to be the last one.
Oh,
and they always do a much larger show.
Right.
It doesn't really matter because, I'll be honest with you, we have two next month.
Right.
We have Royal Quest, and then we have Declaration of Power, which is another... Those are two pay-per-views,
right.
And those are both in October.
Otherwise, it's a pretty open next week. So there isn't a lot going on, but we'll let you know what we decide to do.
Yep. So if you did enjoy this, remember to like, follow, subscribe. Let us know in the comments wherever you're listening or watching us on. Become a patron. I updated everything, so we have new perks. We have cool stuff. I'm going to get merch released soon. I just have to play around with it just a wee bit more, do a little more tweaking, and get that up so you guys can do that. And as always, be majestic.